Welcome to Saturday Night at the Movies, the podcast that celebrates classic, cult, and current films and the people that made them and many other aspects of pop culture. I'm your host, Steve Rubin. Our producer is Ben Shrewsbury, and our signature theme was composed by Greg Lerhoff. Here it's always Saturday night, and our mission is to chronicle film and pop cultural history one memory at a time. Tonight, we welcome actor Jake Cherry, who many of you will remember playing Ben Stiller's son, Nick, in the wonderful Night at the Museum and its sequel, Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian. Jake also played the laconic younger version of Channing Tatum's character in the dark thriller, Son of No One, which we will also discuss. Welcome, Jake.
Hello, thank you for having me.
I always start my conversations with whether you're on one side of the camera or the other. When you first started going to the movies, were you a movie-going family? Did you guys like to go to the movies?
I will tell you, I started acting very young, before I could truly start remembering, that. So I started acting when I was 2 years old. I know my dad loves movies, and we have a vast collection of DVDs. So he's definitely a film buff, but it kind of spurred out of my mom kind of getting me into it, and it kind of going from there. So it's definitely the chicken before the egg, I think, for me.
So when you started to go to the movies kind of on your own, which multiplex did you get dropped off at? I mean, do you have a memory of a specific theater in your neighborhood?
Yeah, actually, there's a small little like Cinemark, maybe four theaters inside, four screens, and that was where I would go to. And I knew a lot of friends from high school and from that went to middle school with me that would end up working there. But recently, it was refurbished to be a brewery, like a gastropub. So it's no longer a movie theater, but now it's actually like the hottest spot in town to go check out.
And what town is that?
It's Old Bridge, like Matawan, that kind of area.
And this is in New Jersey, right?
Yes. Yep. But it's good because they actually stay very close to their roots. They have a movie, like a screen set up in the back that you can actually rent. You can have parties there. So like you'll just go on a Wednesday night and there'll be like Cars will be playing for like a birthday party in the room next door. And they do themed releases. Like they definitely pay homage to the fact that it was a movie theater.
Sure. No, of course. I all of us have our fondest memories of our first movie experiences. I lived practically across the street from a movie theater for 6 years, so I had to get exposed to movies early on. It was just part of my DNA. So you said you started acting from the age of two. So obviously, these were not speaking parts. These were kind of warm, cuddly spot like parts.
Yeah, I started off doing commercials. Commercials was definitely where I found my footing. But as I grew older, started being able to memorize lines and actually make connections with what I, the material I was working with, I started to move towards speaking roles, towards television and then film eventually. Yeah.
Sure. Were you also performing in plays in regular school? Did you do a little bit of that as well?
I did. Throughout elementary school and middle school, I was in and out of public school. So I was homeschooled for a decent chunk of that. But when I did find myself at public school, I did try to make a point to participate in theater or any like film classes that there were. I definitely remember in middle school, I played Danny Zuko in Grease, which was big for me because I at the time I didn't sing at all. So that was a lot to handle, but it was a really fun experience being in a musical. And then in college, I've done a couple musicals too. So I have that musical side of me as well.
So who played Sandy to your Danny?
It was actually a girl I knew from one of my German classes. Actually, we actually were in more classes as we got older. But she's a really nice girl.
Oh, that's great. So you said you actually did sing then.
Yeah, I did. I'm not a singer, but I did. Yeah.
Which song do you think you did best? Please say Grease Lightning.
Probably Grease Lightning.
Oh,
Probably Grease Lightning. Although I actually don't even think I sang that. I think that was Kinnicky's song. I
you're
think that
right.
was that's I think that's another character's
Oh,
song.
you're right. It was Kinnicky's song. I just remember that song very well. Well, that's a lot of fun. Well,
He killed it. So he was great.
Jeff Conaway, who played Kinnicky in the movie, was doing one of those autograph conventions, and my 6-year-old daughter walked up to him and said, "Daddy, I want to see an autograph. That's Kinnicky." And so I walked over to Jeff Conaway, and he signed a picture, and then he said, "That'll be $20,
Oh,
please."
wow.
I said, "You gotta be kidding, really? God, I don't know if I'd give $20 to Burt Lancaster," but I gave him the $20. Now he was nice. He was nice. Well, I got to tell you that my first memories of seeing Night at the Museum, we were on a family trip to Illinois, and we had a break in the action, so we all went out to the multiplex. And as a comedy writer and loves movies, I just And who studied Rod Serling from my Twilight Zone encyclopedia, writing that, Rod Serling believed in the kind of what if genre of storytelling. What if something like this happened? This was such a delight for me and my family, and I've seen it many times since. Tell me kind of your memories of, I know this is a while ago. I was looking at the date. This is 2006, so we're talking 18 years ago. So, tell us how you got involved in that picture.
That was definitely one of the most intense processes that I had been through at that point to be a part of Night at the Museum, and it definitely was intense. But I mean, I was 10 at the time, maybe. It's for the record, for the audience listening, I'm 27 currently, so there definitely is a gap. Definitely is a gap. But it was. I auditioned for it out in LA. It was an LA thing. And I was in LA at the time. I was bicoastal throughout my younger years, going to LA for.
What were you doing in LA?
I was there for pilot season.
I see.
Yep. So I was, living that life 3 months out of the year. I was in LA, for pilot season, maybe longer, maybe less, just depended. And but I just remember that being such an intense just process. I had just signed with a new manager, and it just from everything, like, I didn't really let anything kind of get to my head. Like, I knew who Ben Stiller was, but like, I didn't really know who Ben Stiller was. I just knew he's a famous actor. He's a very funny guy. That's what I knew to the extent. But I mean, I had like three or four callbacks, and then I had a producer session, and then I had another one and another one, and then finally I had an audition with Ben Stiller, and I met him, and I met Shawn Levy, and I had like another audition with him, and it kept going through that process, and finally, I got the call, and it was awesome. I mean, it was I knew going through it and going through that process, it was just a fun, the sides were fun, and it was just I knew that this project would be something special. I mean, just even then, without really that full grasp of what I was getting myself into.
Do you remember what kind of sides they gave you, what you were asked to do?
Yeah, I do remember a lot of the material was. It was specifically mostly the scenes of me with my dad at the park at New Central Park, and me just talking with my dad and just that relationship. I think that was something that they really wanted to make sure was right, because it's a father and son. The father is trying his best to be there for his son and do right by him, and they want that. You need that to feel real. So I definitely am happy that it felt real, I guess.
Well, Ben Stiller is a beloved actor. We all love his characters.
Yeah.
He's kind of he reminds me in a lot of ways doing the kind of material that Woody Allen did 20 years earlier, and Albert Brooks. What was your impression of Ben?
I thought he was just a very put together, very nice guy. I mean, he what actually a big takeaway from me from him from him and being in that space of and I don't want to jump the gun, but also working with Robin Williams too, and to not to compare them, but he was very much just a normal guy at the end of the day. He was very much just happy to be there and very much like very much the commander of his own ship is kind of how I would put it. He was very in control, but I remember him like talking to me and just being like nice and just treating me like, you know, a normal person and not treating me like a kid, but including me and really making me feel welcomed and part of the group.
You know, in looking at your performance and seeing how you projected, you have a very vulnerable quality. You know, you just seem like a good kid who's just trying to get through it, and you want to be sympathetic to your dad, even though he's kind of tripping over his own feet all the time. I thought the relationship was just terrific. Let me put up another picture here because I've got a few. The movie has really a marvelous cast. Let's see. Here we go. There's Ben and Rami. I don't think anybody knew who Rami was at that time. And he was just a lot of
Yeah.
fun. And of course, later won the Oscar for Bohemian Rhapsody. That set must have been pretty crazy. Did they film? Well, they filmed everything in LA, or was there also a New York location?
So actually, we filmed in Vancouver, Canada. That's where all of the interior was filmed in a
Oh.
warehouse that they beautifully created to mimic the Museum of Natural History. I mean, it's they did an incredible job, and we should get into that. But there were exteriors at the actual Museum of Natural History in New York City. So it was Canada and New York.
Oh,
That's where we
that's
filmed
very
it.
cool.
Yeah.
So let's well, I wanted to ask you about Sean Levy in the audition process. Was he one of the more tougher people you had to deal with in that he's going to be directing the film? Was he pretty easygoing?
I think he was pretty easygoing. I mean, I don't think he ever I don't remember him in the audition process like going out of his way or asking anything abnormal that, you know, a normal audition would have been for me at the time. It felt pretty par for the course. It was just the amount of going back and meeting with him and meeting with producers, meeting with the writers and meeting with Ben and just all of it. And because eventually all of that, like eventually you realize like, wow, this is a big deal. They're looking across the entire nation and Canada, and they're looking everywhere for, you know, for this character. So it that is kind of what I was left with more than more so than anything else at
Now,
the audition process.
in that you were underage, I assume that your mom took you to your auditions or your dad?
Yes, my mom was definitely my helper throughout all of just my younger years for sure.
Was she allowed into the audition room with you?
No, she would not come in for the actual audition. Pretty much by the time I started, the first project that I definitely remember she wasn't a part of was there was a show called Third Watch that I was on. It was like a cop and like fireman drama kind of
Sure,
thing.
sure.
And that I distinctly remember that was me, just me and me getting super emotional and being in the scene in the moment. And yeah, from then on, like it was me in the room and me at the wheel for sure.
Were you what you consider to be a nervous kid? Were you pretty confident by then with the museum? Or were you getting a little? I know you're talking about the pressure and the bigness of this, did it freak you out a little bit, or were you, did you pretty much stay under control?
To be completely honest, I definitely had a lot of anxiety and just nerves, just as a person. I think, let alone the acting thing, I think just me as growing up, I just had a lot of anxiety. So it wasn't necessarily going to that. And I really, at the time, it wasn't like it fazed me. I was really just kind of going through it. But I definitely, as a kid, was very sensitive and felt things very deeply and very was very I could get emotional because I cared a lot, and I definitely was a perfectionist growing up, and that really affected a lot of my just my relationships and my work, and I think shows in my acting that I am a very sensitive person, I think, based on just the things that I've done. Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. Did you have a mentor? Did you have anybody other than your parents who gave you some guidance through this audition process?
I not necessarily through this specific process, but I had one acting coach, John Homa, who really helped me wrestle with my own insecurities and just kind of put that stuff aside and just really be in the moment. And he is definitely someone I would give that credit to, because he really helped me. I mean, it and I've had other acting coaches throughout my time, and I went to college and I had acting teachers there, and he definitely, just his style and the tools he taught me very definitely lasted with me for sure.
Sure. So let's see. Let me put up another picture here. Hang on one second. Oh, there you are. There's your main photo from that probably
Yeah,
brings back a there we
that's the
go.
one.
Yeah, there
That's
it
the
is.
one.
All right. So you got the part. Do you remember the moment the phone call rang and you got the part? Can you tell me how that went?
Yeah, I was in this room. I was in the room I'm in right now, which is like a big dining room, or just a dining room that I'm in. But my mom just was like, "Jake, come grab the phone." And she handed me the phone, and my manager was on, so was my agent. They were both on the line, and they told me the news. They told me that I did it, that I booked the part. And it just, like, a wave of excitement and relief and just like anxiety all hit me at the same time. It was awesome. I mean, it was an awesome feeling. I definitely love getting that call for sure.
That's great. That's great. All right. So you get the role. You were in New Jersey at, oh, no, you said you were in LA at the time. So what, so did you go to Vancouver first? Was that your first trip?
I don't remember if we did either or first. Like, I definitely remember we did scenes out in New York. I don't remember if it was first. There might have been some stuff that was switched around, but either way, the trip to Vancouver was awesome, because it was one of the first times that this was me now going not to California, not just to New York, but to another location, like someplace completely different. So they put us up in a hotel. We were in like the Marriott, like right in downtown Vancouver. So actually, we were right across from a movie theater that we would go to all the time, because that was such a just an awesome thing to do, and it was right across the street from us. And I mean, Vancouver was beautiful. There was tons of things to do, out like hiking out in the mountains. There was the science center that you could go to if you went on these like little boats that went across this river, or this lake, like this waterway. It was just a beautiful, beautiful city, and fun to spend time in when I wasn't working. Yeah.
And do you remember, you said that they took over a very large warehouse and they
Yes.
converted. Was it a formal studio, or was it a separate thing altogether?
I wouldn't know if it was a former studio. What I remember is that they built massive, massive like sets inside of this big warehouse, and they had green screen sections. They had so many different nooks and pathways, and it was a giant space, because what you see in the movie is I mean, it's big, and all that space is real. That was, you know, at the time there was no faking that. Like, sure, maybe a doorway down this way or one alleyway might have had, you know, a little movie magic going on, but for real, it was man-made. It was an impressive set
I'll
to be
bet.
on
I'll
and
bet.
to just to look at. On top of, there was lots of extras, lots of people helping out, and all these people had crazy and ridiculous and just intricate costumes and people, you know, the my favorite group of people were the cavemen. I love the cavemen, and those actors, those gentlemen were so nice, and I just had fun messing around with them and just goofing off. I mean, it was a really fun set to be on.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, it was like a circus in motion. It was one of those sets you would want to be on the set with. Obviously, I got to ask you about Robin Williams. I mean, Robin, such a legendary presence. Tell me a little bit about Rob and how you reacted with him.
Yeah, he was such a presence, and he was really just a light in the room. I mean, he would just entertain everybody, and he would monologue, and just he would goof around, and he would just have fun, and he would bring people along with him. He would pick up props and just play with them and just put on a show when no one was asking. Nobody, you know, he just that's who he was. So it was really special to get to see him in his element, just, you know, playing and having fun. You know, from my perspective, that's what I saw. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun character. I mean, Robin had the ability to just completely transform himself completely into somebody. And I know that's kind of the actor's responsibility, but Robin would do it a little bit further than most. And he seemed to be really enjoying himself as Teddy Roosevelt.
I think he did. I grew up watching Aladdin and Mrs. Doubtfire, so that's where I knew him from, and Flubber, and just a bunch of other random movies that he was a part of. But he owned it. I mean, he owned, you know, just the mannerisms and just the power that Teddy Roosevelt had, and yeah, it was just a joy.
And I learned her name is Mitsuo. I think Mitsuo Peck played Sacagawea.
Yeah, she was also just super sweet. She was a delight. Everybody was just really just so pleasant and just so nice, and treated me with respect and just included me. I mean, you know, being a child actor, I feel like there's so many taboos, but I didn't feel excluded in any way, you know. I really feel very lucky throughout my entire career, working on many other projects and things that I felt really included. I never felt ostracized. I never felt, you know, looked down upon. I mean, my mom might have different stories, but that's whatever. I know my experiences. I know my time on set was good. So
Did she spend the whole time up there when you were in Vancouver with you?
she was with me for the first film. She was there with me for the first film, and then the second film, my grandma came with me. So,
Oh.
but she was definitely a part of it. She was around.
Sure. Now, obviously there are a lot of times in the movie where, you know, you don't actually see what's happening because it's going to be done with special effects. I mean, the Tyrannosaurus Rex coming after
Oh
everybody. I mean,
yeah, Rexy.
what do you remember? And I'm asking you to go back a few years, but what do you remember about moments where you had to imagine something like that? What were some of the things that you had to imagine?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I'll tell you what I saw, so you can then imagine with me. A lot of the time, Rexy was a tennis ball with a little piece of tape on a giant pole. That was the eye line, right? That's the eye line is a pole with a tennis ball on it. But I mean, I that's part of the experience, as part of being an actor, is being able to imprint something on that and to still feel the emotions and to draw upon what is real and what is going on and to utilize that. And that I definitely remember is what I found myself doing is taking what was real in the moment. What was real was my relationship with my dad, what was going on around me, the craziness of there being a T-Rex in front of me. That's kind of what I drew upon. Another memory, there was a scene where I'm riding on Rexy in Central Park. And how we filmed that was I was on a mechanical bull in a green screen stage. So in that warehouse, they had a massive green screen wall, and I'm just riding on this mechanical bull and, in imaginary land. And that was really fun, though. I mean, that was fun. And it wasn't too hard for me to put myself in that space and to pretend that there's a dinosaur there, because they made it feel as real as it could be. Props to everybody on the set. They absolutely did what they could. They, if they could have replaced the tennis ball on the stick, they would have, they would have. But it was definitely part of it, just to pretend.
Did Sean add any sound effects for Rexy that you remember? Did you have a tennis ball hanging on a line? Was there any sound around?
I think that I feel like I remember him saying something about how it was just interesting to see how you have this dinosaur, but it's acting like a dog. And so I think that I don't remember if they added it, but I feel like they added some, dogish sound effects, something like that to Rexy, to because that's what Rexy really was, is just a big, lovable dog, right? So who just wanted to play fetch and just hang out with the night guard. So I don't think they added anything like while we were filming. There was no like T-Rex scream or anything like
Roar.
that. But it definitely was something to play around with, and I know they did, yeah.
Now, as I recall, in movie making with minors, you don't work as long a day as most people. You have to, you certainly have, I think you have school, right, during the day as well.
Yeah, that was definitely a big part of my time on set, was actually being schooled. For th minimum of 3 hours a day, you needed to be in school. And because I was in a lot of I was in a lot of the movie, I had to be, a lot of that time I needed to be on set. So when there were days when I wasn't necessarily needed or anything like that, I would spend more time in school just to make sure I was building up on that, banking hours, as they call it, just because that's super important. And at the time, I was definitely a very self very motivated learner. I was in and out of homeschool and public school, so I was already capable of being in kind of a self-structured learning environment. But having a tutor was awesome, because it just meant I had somebody to ask questions to, or someone to help guide me when I was lost, or to bring something else to just have fun with, and
Sure. Were you the only student?
For the majority of it, there were a couple scenes where there were other kids. I remember one of the scenes was when we get to the museum. I bring two of my friends with me, and we're going to try to get in for free or something, because my dad's now the night guard, and we're there watching him basically be fired in front of us. And I remember that day that, they were in class with me. But yeah, for the most part, it was definitely just me in the classroom, just grinding away.
And speaking of classrooms, you did have a classroom sequence here where you bring your dad to school for show and tell.
Yes.
So that was a cool scene. I like that scene. Any times in the film, I mean, if you had to say what was the toughest scene for you to make in terms of physicality, do you remember anything being particularly difficult? I mean, certainly riding the bull was probably a bit challenging.
I think the most physically difficult thing was actually the ice skating scene. When I was playing ice hockey, I didn't ice skate before that, right? So I really wasn't sure if I was going to even do that scene, if they were going to use a body double for me. But what they did do was send me to the Chelsea skating rink in New York City, like 2 days a week. I got ice skating lessons. So come time to film, I was able to skate, and it doesn't look like I don't know what I'm doing if you watch the scene. So yeah, I think it worked out. They were able to just use me. They didn't have to get a body double and have to do any movie magic there. So that was definitely physically was difficult, but no challenge truly though. At the end of the day, I was able to do it. I was physically fit. I was a young kid.
The bad guys in the movie are the older guys, Dick Van Dyke, Mickey Rooney,
Yes.
Bill Cobb. What do you remember about them?
I remember Mickey Rooney was just a riot. I mean, he was a pepper box, right? Like, he's just full of just funny quips and one-liners. Dick Van Dyke, he was just so sweet and just so pleasant. I remember him singing sometimes. And just being just a really sweet man. So, they were definitely really, really cool people.
Very cool, very cool. Were you prepared for the reception the movie got from the public? I mean, this was a big mother hit when it came out. How did you feel the first time you saw the movie completed?
I was blown away because I had gone into it like knowing the behind the scenes of it, right? So like I know like what was real, what wasn't, what was fake, what they added later, and I was blown away. I mean, I couldn't believe that they put this entire production together and they made such a cohesive and fun and just it felt like lightning in a bottle in a way with just how many just characters and people were involved in it. It was definitely it felt like I was part of something special, and then and the release and the reception of it really cemented that feeling that hey, this is something special. I mean, I felt that way going into it in the audition process. Like I knew it would be something big, but yeah, it definitely blew my socks off for sure.
When you went to New York for the exteriors, what was it? Was there snow on the ground, or was that all fake?
There was snow on the ground. Yeah, that was real. One of the I love the I think they used it this the shot of me and Paul Rudd jumping over like a big gap of water on the sidewalk. Like that was real. That was a real thing of water there. So like that was definitely a fun shoots. Actually the well we'll get it to later, but the premiere of it was actually at the Museum of Natural History. That's where I saw the premiere, and that was special because they did a thing where you could spend the night at the museum, and me and a bunch of other kids and their parents who were invited to the premiere got to spend a night at the museum, and they had a bunch of activities. You could go to there was the dinosaur exhibit, so you could actually go to the exhibit and look at the dinosaurs. And it was they turned down the lights, so it was definitely got people in the space of the movie. It was really special.
Now that's so cool. I took my kids to a thing like that in LA once. Yeah, then a night at the museum. I think it was long
Yes.
before the movie came out. But yeah, those are special times. The Owen Wilson character who plays Jebediah, and I forget the name of the actor who plays the British or the Roman general. Do you remember who that is? I don't remember,
I
but yeah,
don't.
I don't think you had any scenes with them because.
I didn't. I didn't. They had filmed their stuff. I don't remember if it was before or after, but they filmed their stuff separately on a green screen stage. So I didn't meet Owen Wilson until the premiere. I never had any scenes. He wasn't around when I was filming. That's all I know.
That's great. That's great. So you went to the premiere. It must have been a real thrill ride for you.
Yeah, it was incredibly special. And yeah, I mean, the reception of it was great. I couldn't even really believe it. At the time, I wasn't really being like, I was being recognized by people. When I would go to a theater, my friend was having a birthday party, and they're saying like, "Oh, we're gonna go see the movie. You should come." So I would, and I'd just be in the lobby here in a New Jersey theater, in some random town, and people would be like, "Oh my God, that's you!" And that would be like that was new to me. That was new to me. So that was fun. That was definitely fun. And getting fan mail was something I didn't expect, getting fan mail, but people were really drawn to the film and thought that they really loved the kid too. So I feel really lucky about that.
Very cool, very, very cool. So a couple years go by, and they're going to make another one. So tell us how that came about.
Yeah, the second one was definitely exciting to do. I felt with that one, I once reading the script, I was like, oh, this is so the older Nick. This, he is totally the kind of guy who's hacking the mainframe on his computer, with his headset, doing logistics, helping his dad traverse the Smithsonian. So that was fun. That actually was more me kind of doing my own things, because I wasn't in the Smithsonian. That was Ben Stiller up there, but that was also a really fun thing to do.
You were kind of acting like Q in the James Bond movies to Ben Stiller's James Bond.
Exactly. That is exactly it.
I was channel surfing a few weeks ago, and I came across a film, and let me just put it up here really quickly here. Son of No One. And I didn't know anything about the movie, but I noticed the cast, and I said, Channing Tatum, Tracy Morgan, Katie Holmes, Al Pacino, I gotta see this one out. So I'm watching the movie, and all of a sudden, I see you, and it's funny because here you are with Al. I said, I know this guy, I know this guy, and I couldn't quite remember, and then I made the connection to Night at the Museum. This is like the complete opposite of Night at the Museum. This is a dark thriller, and for the viewers and listeners who don't know this movie, basically Jake is playing the young Channing Tatum. When we meet Channing Tatum, he's a police officer, and we learn that when he was a kid, he was witness to some horrible events. And it's made him almost catatonic when he talks to people. He doesn't say much. This must have been a very challenging role for you and an unusual role for a kid. Tell us how this one came about.
This was I remember auditioning for this in New York. This was out of New York. I at the time, and I think throughout my career, I was drawn to drama and to projects that would push me emotionally, and that's just something I was just always drawn to, I feel like. It was definitely a challenge to put myself in my character's shoes, because it's just so far removed from my life. I have a secure housing situation. I have my parents to take care of me, and I had, everything under the sun at the time. So this was such a divergence from, what I know. But being an actor, I still found a way to bring myself there emotionally, and to listen, and to really try to still live that moment and that reality, and to do what I could to really put myself there. But to be fair, the director, Dito Montiel, he went through a lot of that when he was growing up. So he really helped me bridge that gap. And on top of that, being there, being filming in the projects and just being in that space, that also helped. That also helped
So
to ground me.
you actually filmed in the projects in New York.
Yes. I wish I knew, because it was I wish I knew off the top of my head, but I remember we were filming one of the, like we were in a unit, like a house, like an apartment, and the owner of it was like a former football player or something like that. And like he was like, hey, you guys can use you know, you guys can use my place for the filming. And like that was just so interesting, because that's where we were set up. But yeah, it definitely required so much realism. It required that sense of grit and just all of that baggage, right? Like there, because my character Milk, he had a lot of baggage. He had a lot. So, to bring that to screen, I definitely had to do research. I had to really try to put myself in my character's shoes.
Now you're in this scene. You're working. You spend some good scenes with Al Pacino. Al Pacino. That must have been interesting for you, because by the time you did this movie, you obviously knew who Al Pacino was.
Yes, I did. And he was one of the greatest scene partners I had. I mean, bar none. He really was fabulous to work with. Because he had such a presence, and he had such a care about what I was doing, and he really wanted to make sure that we were on the same page, and just that we knew where everything was going, and I feel like it showed. I feel like he really, he I mean, in the film, he was basically my dad's boss, kind of like he was his coworker. He was also a de My dad was also a detective, and so he, even though I did these bad things, he knew he had a responsibility to take care of me, and to make sure I was protected. And so even though he didn't like it, he still had to make sure I was taken care of and I was okay. And I mean, we're talking about murder and addiction and drug use with the relationship between me and Al's character. And he had to break the law to protect me and to keep me safe. And it was very powerful working with him. It was just it was great.
Oh, sure.
But
Well, I
on top of that, though, I'd love to tell you that he was very fun. His son was into riddles at the time, and so was I, it turned out. I was very much into riddles, and also the jokes, Tom Swifties, which are like, they're like kind of play on words a little bit, jokes with play on words. And I was super into them. So I would go to my joke book and my riddle book, and I would give him a couple in between takes. And this is throughout we're doing such heavy, heavy emotional stuff, but I still found time to joke around and to tell riddles and to just have fun and to make light of it, because it was so emotionally draining and so real, you know?
I mean,
So there.
you're playing the younger Channing Tatum. Obviously, you don't have scenes together, but was Channing Tatum there for you if necessary? Did he give you any guidance?
He we I had only seen him a couple times throughout the filming process, but I did meet him to chat with him and to like get a feel of, what am I like when I'm older? What is he like when he's younger? That kind of thing. So it was definitely interacted with him, and he was just a super cool dude. I mean, he was cool. He said something really nice to me, and this might be true, seeing as how I'm trying to get into law, but he told me that one day he thought I'd be a politician based on how I was talking to him, and just us chatting. So that'd be pretty cool. I could see myself going into politics.
There you
So
go. There
if
you
I
go.
have
Well,
Channing Tatum's seal of approval, I'll take it.
Well, this country certainly is can use some new blood. So, you've told me that you have a desire now to become an attorney, is work in entertainment law.
Yes.
Was there a particular moment that you realized, yes, this is what I want to do? Were there other, I mean, obviously acting cooled off a little bit. You wanted to find something new and different.
Yeah, I definitely that is a part of it. I mean, I wanted to making that transition from child actor to adult is not easy. And if anyone tells you it's easy, they had it easy, right? They had it easy. So, it just seemed like it was always something that I had toyed around with because I love politics and I found. I mean, law's interesting. I definitely think it was interesting growing up. It was something that was always at the back of my head. My mom would be like, "Oh, you could be a trial lawyer. You'd be amazing as a trial lawyer." So it was definitely on my radar. And I realized that a lot of the skills that I had as an actor translate to being a lawyer. They translate active listening. Sympathy, being empathy, being able to really hear someone and to really try to help figure out the root of their problem and to ask why for them and to be their champion in a way. That's something that's very important to me. And it also was important to me because I had a lot of people champion me. I had a lawyer. I have SAG and SAG-AFTRA people behind, that they're behind me. I have my agents and managers behind me. So it was definitely something that is important to me. And it seems like a very natural kind of transition going into law, doing research on scripts, doing deep analysis on characters. That's going to be things I plan on doing at law school and beyond. So, and I am excited to do research, excited to learn and to read. I mean, reading was always something that was so that I feel like I credit to my acting ability was growing up and reading. I mean, I read so much. Andrew Clements was my favorite author, Frindle and Things Not Seen. Like those books were my jam. So I definitely oh, a lot of my just a lot of that, like a lot of my skills in pronunciation and like ability to like bring something to life from reading. And so that's also just another natural transition to lawyering, to being an attorney.
Sure. We wish you a lot of success with that, and I know you're going to be successful because
Thank you.
you're what they say in Scotland, a very winning lad.
That, thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
No, this has been great, Jake. I really appreciate you taking the time because you were a part of a movie series that has really not only captured the international public of movie going, but at a time when a lot of movies are pretty dark and a lot of stories are rather depressing, even adventure movies that feature a post-apocalyptic world, even though it's a major fantasy. Night at the Museum inspires all of us because it's a fun movie, and I think we needed more fun movies, and we still need fun movies. So I thank you for being a part of that adventure.
It was an adventure. That is exactly how I would describe it, to a T.
You've
And
been.
thank you so much for having me. This was
Oh.
so much fun to be to
Oh.
be on your show.
Thank you. And we've been listening to and watching Jake Cherry. The show is Saturday Night at the Movies. I'm your host, Steve Rubin. Our producer's Ben Shrewsbury. And thank you for listening. Thanks, Jake.
Have a good one.